And I keep trying. Hey, this is Dr. Gene Mesko, a fellow mostly hairless ape here at the Church of Science. I wanted to talk about satisfaction today. Thank you, Mick. Hope he seems to be satisfied. He's had a pretty good life. But I'm here to talk about satisfaction in a different sense, in an evolutionary sense. That's what we've been doing. And I wanted to talk about having enough and being satisfied. That's today's idea relates to an interesting concept in evolution called runaway selection. Because I think that's what's actually happening with one of our artificial adaptations. Talked about my artificial adaptations in civilization before, and one of them's the economy, one's government, one's belief systems. They organize our civilizations and let us work together as evolving social primates, and we get the stuff done. As we all believe in something, we all accept the other people in the group are all working towards it, and we work together. It's pretty great. But there's this weird thing where sometimes we don't know when to say when. When do you get satisfied? When do you say enough is enough? And that's today's topic. And I wanted to talk about that in the context of this phenomena I mentioned, runaway selection. So runaway selection is this status. So selection is obviously what's going on in evolution. We talk about natural selection. I've been talking about artificial selection. But the idea of selection is you put pressure on life and you cause something to happen. And you favor one set of variables over another. That's how we get these things we call adaptations in evolution. Because whatever works better in terms of keeping you alive, that's increases your fitness, helps you survive. And we've hit a point here on Earth where we've gotten to this, moving towards this global civilization and the dominant government. People seem to like democracy, although there seems to be some interest in having autocrats, having the big man in charge seems to be some interest. I think people are overwhelmed by life. And some people are there, and it's mostly the rich people. And this is where I want to talk about runaway selection, because I think that's what's happened with capitalism, with our economic system. The idea of democracy is pretty young, and what we've had for most of our history have been autocrats. We've had kings and queens and dictators, and we've had this experimental thing with democracy for a while. But the really dominant system we've had the last few centuries has been capitalism. And the whole idea of capitalism is a way to organize the economy. How do we distribute our resources based on ownership? And why does that relate to runaway selection? Well, because I think you might agree that it's kind of ridiculous. Well, let's take America, for example. In America, approximately 1% of the population owns over 50% of the capital. So when we're talking about ownership, we've got a very small segment of the population that controls most of the resources. And the other 99% of the population has less than half the resources to work with. I mean, if you ran a tribe like this or a club like this, and somebody, the boss walked in, the president, whoever was in charge, and said, all right, I'm going to take half of the money and spend it on what I want, and the rest of you figure out what to do with the rest of the money, I don't think you'd stay in leadership role for very long. I think we'd run that person out on their ear. But we let it go because we've had this idea of ownership and capitalism. And we taunt each other with the idea, especially the 1% taunts us with the idea, that you too could be rich, ignoring the fact that a lot of the wealth is generational wealth, is based on having a global market that we've built up because of our technology. And how does that relate to this thing called runaway selection? Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Best example, and the easiest example, I think, is an experiment with peacocks. We've all probably seen peacocks and peahens, quirky species with a very showy male. That's common in birds for sexual reproduction. The males get to put on some sort of display. The males tend to be flashier among the sexes in the bird species. And it works in other animals too, insects. There's a variety of examples, but peacocks are a really easy example because I know of some experiments that they did that show it really nicely. That you think about peacock feathers as being sort of unwieldy. And what's the advantage of that? Well, the peahens like them. And from the peacock perspective, having a big tail is going to get you in with the ladies. But you might have noticed, if you've been to the zoo, all the peacocks sort of have the same tail feathers. Because that's evolution, that's natural selection. The peacocks, whoever came up with the longer tail feather or the showiest tail feathers first, got more action. They reproduced and survived more than other males, and so they passed on those genetics to their offspring. And we got more until a point where it became a disadvantage. So you know, this is something that we run into called a trade-off. So for the males, peacock tails have hit a point where it's an equilibrium. There's a liability in having a big showy tail, obviously. Might make you more visible prey for a bigger species. Might be just physically unwieldy to carry that around. It obviously takes nutrition to build all that tissue, all that biological tissue. So there's some trade-offs for the male. And that seems to have hit a point of evolutionary equilibrium, if you will. That for the peacocks, if you go to the zoo and look at the peacocks, most of the peacocks will have relatively equal tail feathers. And they're all pretty. And they're all nice. But there's no big difference anymore. So as far as peacock mating and peahen mating, the tails are a requirement, but they're not going to make a difference anymore because everybody sort of hit the same plateau. But what about the peahens? The peahens obviously liked the longer tails. They still will only mate with, or preferentially mate with, males with those long tail feathers. But what if you actually made them even longer? The peacocks have stopped growing them longer because of those trade-offs I just mentioned. But if you came in and manipulated it, which is what scientists love to do experiments, and people have done this. They've gone in and they've cut tail feathers off of one peacock and actually attached them to another peacock to give them an excessively long tail. Guess which peacocks in that experiment the peahens prefer? They go for the peacocks with the artificially extended tails. And if you keep doing it, there doesn't seem to be a limit. That's the idea of runaway selection. That if there's something that benefits me, in this case, for the peahen, she wants, well, what the evolutionary model would say is, she's selecting for a better mate. And a mate is showing off. By showing off, they're saying that they're fit, that they're healthy, and that they'd make a good mating partner. And so, however sex works, and we won't get into that right now, but the peahens selected for those tail feathers, and they've done it for years and years. It's been going on for thousands of years. And we've got those species now. But now, they've hit this equilibrium point for the males. So the males won't grow them any longer, naturally. But if we do it artificially and we extend it, the peahens will come back and say, hey, that's pretty great. And that's not the only species that's been shown in. You can show it in a variety of insect species. People have done it with butterflies, where size matters in terms of mating choice. And if you make an artificially large butterfly, for instance, and I've seen those experiments, and the partner will select the artificially enlarged, even if it's an entirely fake butterfly, they'll pursue it because they want the larger mate. And so this idea of runaway selection is, let's just say it's equivalent to greed in human behavior. It's the idea that more is better, which is not a bad evolutionary strategy, especially when we're talking about resources, which is how I interpret the economy as an artificial adaptation. We build economies because we have social groups and we have limited resources. But if I could get more for myself, that's a pretty good strategy to have. That's a pretty good take on the system. And so greed within capitalism, I would say from an evolutionary perspective, becomes a case of runaway selection. And so now we've got this greed system. Is that evolved? Well, capitalism evolved with the rise of the scientific industrial revolution. We got to build all these mechanical devices. We could build factories. And we had an ownership class who had the resources to do that. Well, those systems evolved in an empirical system, an empire system, if you will. Not empirical in the sense of that, but they're the primary rule. There were rulers, there were kings, there were the aristocrats who had all the money. They controlled all the resources. and eventually private capitalists built up, because the original capital used to just be land. We talked, that's why we call it real estate. It's real. Think about the time before the Industrial Revolution. Let's go back to Western Europe in the 1500s, 1600s, even before that. It was feudalism that eventually evolved into mercantilism to capitalism as far as economies, but way back before machines, it was all human labor. We had a few farm animals, but anything that was produced was pretty much produced by craftsmen or craftswomen. Clothing, tools, they were all made by hand before we had machines. So the skills of the craftspeople determined the value of the objects. And they were limited. You could only work so fast. You could only hammer out a sword so far, so long, and so fast at the blacksmith. You could only sew so many clothes. But we've hit this point since the Industrial Revolution where we produce huge excesses. And if you can become the best one in a given market, and now that we have this global market with the internet, we have these billionaires on the planet. And the question becomes, how useful is that relative to human civilization? Is it a good thing that we have these excessively rich people who basically dominate the distribution of resources? They dominate the economy. Because if they decide to buy up a media station or buy up television stations and news or movie theaters or movie studios, and they put out whatever they want as news, and they pay for advertising for whatever they want to sell, be it guns or liquor or cigarettes or any other item that might not necessarily be in the best interest of the rest of humanity, but if it makes a profit, well, then it's going to get selected for, because that's how evolution works. Evolution, within a given adaptation, says how much does this adaptation function to improve survival and reproduction. That's what natural selection says. How does artificial selection work? Well, artificial selection is based on whatever we think about. That's the weird thing about artificial selection. It's all based on human consciousness. We make decisions about stuff. And if we decide we want more of something, or if having more of something is a good thing, and somebody's willing to sell it, well, the price is going to go up. And somebody's going to make a profit. And that's okay. That's actually a really great way to run an economy. I mean, I think we've decided through trial and error that a centralized economy like the communists had didn't work. We like having a capitalist economy. I like being rewarded for my efforts. But are billionaires really being rewarded for their efforts? Are these one percenters who own over half of the resources in America, is their income and their wealth relative to their worth? That's the big question for today. They don't seem to be satisfied with it, because they always seem to want more. As they play games with the stock market, they play games with cyber cash, Bitcoin, all of those things. If you don't think that's an effort to get away from taxation and democracy, then you need to read Atlas Shrugged and figure out what people with money really want. They just want more. Everybody does once. We all want more. But when's it enough? When do you have satisfaction? That's why we've evolved other systems. That's why we have religions evolved and said, oh, maybe we should take care of the poor. Maybe we should be nice about it. Maybe we should be philanthropic. Maybe we should build some libraries and some schools and some hospitals and do things for other people. And that's happened a fair amount. But I would dare say it hasn't happened enough. The fact that the rich and powerful get to play their games while people starve and people get killed and we do really stupid things and fight over issues that really aren't anybody's business, in my opinion. Who cares who sleeps with who? But if we're going to have a civilization, we have to acknowledge that we need to have children grow up to be good workers, to man the battlements of the civilization and build the next generation of tools and infrastructure, whatever it might be. And so we support schools and we do that. But it seems like it's very grudging. And most of the time when we talk about problems in our modern world, It's all about who's going to pay for it. I think the 1% should pay for it. The people who started the Occupy Wall Street movement a few years ago tried that, and they've been pretty effectively squashed. Because the last thing the rich and powerful want to hear is that they should pay a little more. That maybe they're sucking up too many resources, and the rest of us are left fighting over the scraps. And maybe that's a little warped. But how do they maintain that? They distract us. They get us worrying about who's having a baby, or who's sleeping with who, or who should be fighting who, or which god is more important. And they get us all distracted with all these different things. And we never stop and think and say, wait a minute. What if we just took it easy? What if we all just stepped back and got out of each other's business and just tended our part of the world, did a little gardening, did a little home maintenance, and lived our lives and did our job and had a decent vacation and had a decent retirement? Wouldn't that be a little bit better if everybody could have those decent components of life? That if life was a little more civilized and you could actually just say, hey, how would you do that? Well, it's a matter of saying, well, where are the resources going? So when somebody gets a really good idea and they start a company, yeah, they should be rewarded for that. But if they happen to build something and they happen to become the most efficient market distributor, that's a really great idea, having this global network of warehouses that Amazon can do. But does the owner of that really worth billions? I mean, yeah, he had a great idea. But shouldn't all those people in the warehouse be making a little more money? Maybe having better health benefits? Maybe having some vacation time? Maybe having a retirement plan from all of that money that's flowing through there? You can call it socialism if you want. I call it capitalist democracy. Because capitalist democracy to me combines the two best adaptations we have for civilization. Two of the good adaptations. I think science is the best adaptation. But we need a government and we need an economy. And capitalism works. We definitely want to encourage effort. We want people to push their limits and do the best they can in a given field. But you should be able to make a decent living at it. That's how we should structure the economy. But right now, we structure the economy only for capitalism. We don't bother with the people, because that's really what demos is. Democracy is really about the people. And if we want to have a functional civilization, and if we want to take the American ideals of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, how should we structure that? Well, if we have a democracy, we can all vote on it. And I think if enough people understood the math, that 1% of the population owns over half the resources, or half the capital, we would realize we're really not living in a democracy. We're really living in a plutocracy, where the plutocrats, the really rich people, who get to pay for, who put in the billions of dollars every year, have to see what's coming up in 2024 here. Because in 2020, it's my understanding we spent close to $20 billion on the election. Think what you could do with $20 billion. As an older politician once said, you know, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon we're talking about real money. And the money that's spent for the jabbering yahoos who are politicians, it could be better spent on building better schools and solving problems. And that's the kind of civilization we should have. And that would be a capitalist democracy, where everybody gets a chance to work and earn money, and it would be expected that you'd have benefits for healthcare, and you'd be able to go to school, and you'd have money for retirement, and you'd go and put in your efforts, and you'd earn according to your skills and your effort. It also wouldn't be a matter of not having healthcare, not having educational opportunities, not having a decent home, if we could distribute the resources a little more. So we skim a little off the top and we just say, do you really need to be a billionaire? What if you were just a 100 millionaire? Wouldn't that be enough? Because that's the issue here, satisfaction. Trying to get rid of all the grumpiness we have where people shoot each other, when people have to buy guns and go get angry at each other. Why? Because they don't have enough. Because a few people have too much. And I think we need to start redistributing. Call me a communist, call me a socialist, sure, I don't care. What I'm doing is trying to make capitalist democracy. I'm saying people should work. I think welfare is stupid. Welfare is buying off poor people, saying we don't know what to do. What we should have is we should have workforces. Yeah, we should bring back the CCC, the stuff we did in the Depression. There's plenty of jobs. There's plenty of work that needs to get done. There's plenty of garbage in the street. There's plenty of recycling that needs to be sorted. There's plenty of help in the classrooms that teachers need. There's plenty of street sweeping that needs to be done. There's plenty of park maintenance that needs to be done. There's plenty of lots of things that need to be done. There's military forces that need to be put in place to make sure people stop messing with each other. There's lots of service that could be done. And we should pay people for that. And that should be a part of the job. If you don't like those jobs, then you could go to school and get skills and do better jobs. But how much effort and how much talent is spent in this game where what we have now is basically just a capitalist system, really without much of a democracy, because the votes are bought and paid for by the rich people. And we only hear about the things that they want to hear about. Oh, we shouldn't have any taxes. I don't know about you, but I'm content with my tax rate. I make a decent living. I've been a biology professor. I'm a teacher. I'm a drone of the state. So I'm speaking from that perspective, sure. But the idea is, when you talk to people, most of them say, I'd like a little more money. Well, I think it could be had. I think we could find a better way to distribute some of those resources if we just started shaving a little off the top. And I don't think the rich people would object if we gave them some appropriate alternatives. So, don't start the revolution without me. This is Dr. Gene Mesko, talking, and we'll talk again soon. Take care, guys.